tomorrow, pry open the door or a window. A polite break-in, Alan says. A fixable break-in, Kate says. Cover our tracks and cover our asses. Kate's right, I say. This place might look abandoned, but that's an illusion. Someone owns it, and that warding suggests the owner is a supernatural. I'd rather not be the stereotypical teens destroying property to satisfy idle curiosity.
I wouldn't say it's idle, Holly says. There's enough weirdness to suggest something's going on, and this cabin being warded isn't a coincidence. But I agree that we don't have a valid reason for breaking down the door. Also, night is falling fast, and those wards tell me we aren't the scariest things out here.
Agreed, Alan says. Let's get moving. We encounter nothing on our way back. I'm not sure whether that's a relief or a mild disappointment. Like hearing the music build in a horror movie, and then nothing actually jumps out. We arrive at the conference center to find Trisha and another counselor walking the perimeter.
Where were you guys?
Trisha says as we exit the woods.
Enjoying nature, Kate says. There isn't nearly enough of that on the schedule. We have a whole forest here, she waves, and not a single outside activity after dinner. Perhaps because we also have a camp full of teens who've never set foot in a forest. We're restricting outdoor activities to daylight hours.
Kate's mouth opens to argue. At my look, she settles for muttering under her breath. I'm sorry we were gone so long, I say. We were concerned about Mason. Have you seen him?
Get inside, she says. You've missed the nighttime snack, so don't go looking for food.
Kate's mouth opens again. This time I cut her off with, That's fine. We'll just use our cell phones before we go to bed. I say it without challenge, but Trisha wheels on me, as if my voice drips sarcasm.
You missed that too, she says. Maybe tomorrow you'll follow the rules.
I hesitate. Then I say carefully, If we can just have one of our phones for a quick text.
Or what? You'll sick mommy on me? You might be the Alpha's son, but you don't get special treatment here, Logan Danvers. Now, take your sister and your new, a dismissive wave at the others, starter pack, and go to bed.
She stalks off with the other counselor. We watch her go, and then Elijah says, Starter pack? Are we collector cards? And does anyone else feel like we just got sent to bed without supper? How old are we?
Not to mention the fact she just outed us, Kate mutters. If you guys didn't know we're werewolves, you would now, after she was the one who wanted us keeping it quiet.
That was odd, I say.
Kate pats me on the back. You're just figuring that out, Lo? This whole conference is odd. But Mom will figure we were having too much fun to call. Paige can settle all this tomorrow. Everything seems quiet tonight. Let's hope it stays that way.
Chapter 18. Kate. We split up after that. Logan and Alan head down the center hall. Elijah motions for me to wait, and I do with Holly, until the other two turn the corner.
Anyone up for a kitchen raid?
Elijah asks. My hand shoots up so fast he laughs.
Figured that, he says.
I do have food in my room, I say. In case you're only suggesting a raid out of necessity. Mom doesn't send us anywhere without a footlocker's worth of snacks.
I've got some too, he says. A box of beef jerky.
Beef jerky? He mock scowls.
No judgment, remember? I'm a Texas boy. Rural Texas, ma'am. I love me some beef jerky and some chewing tobacco.
He pauses. Okay, just the jerky. I look at Holly. See how he did that? Mention the chewing tobacco and suddenly I'm thinking the beef jerky isn't that bad. So how about you? Up for a kitchen raid? Her expression says she's reluctant to seem like a poor sport, but tonight was already enough rule-breaking for her. We'll grab you a snack, I say. And we won't be long. Is that okay? Sure. I'll be reading for an hour or so anyway. It's only... She checks her watch. 10:30? They really do think we're children, don't they? Apparently. I will see you in an hour max then, and I'll bring snacks. Elijah reaches for the lock on the kitchen door, and I put out a hand to stop him. You can't keep snapping those, I say. It's like breaking into that cabin, not the subtlest way to trespass. He lifts his hand, revealing a key. Ah, I say, carry on. Hey, I'm a teenager and a werewolf, he says. First thing I want to establish in any new situation, where's the food and how do I get it? He opens the door. We're at the far end, on the other side of the dining hall. Everyone has been sent to bed for the night, and there's no one even on this side of the building. We tiptoe across the floor, so we don't alert fellow campers sleeping below, but talking in low voices is safe. I survey the pantry as Elijah rifles through the cupboards. When he's done, he finds me assembling stacks of graham crackers, marshmallows, and chocolate. I put them in the toaster oven and watch the marshmallows expand. Then I pop them out before the dinger can sound. I try to hand Elijah one. He eyes it with suspicion. S'mores, I say, an essential part of any camping experience.
If you say so.
He takes one and examines it. Oh, come on, I say. You must have made s'mores around a campfire. Didn't you ever go camping?
Camping is a white folk thing. There's a reason God invented mattresses, and I don't question his wisdom.
Uh-huh. Didn't you tell me you'd been to summer camp before? I hop onto the counter and settle in next to the bag of s'more fixings, building another between bites of the one I've already baked.
Bible camp, which did not involve the pagan sacrifice of hot dogs and marshmallows to the god of fire.
He snatches the last s'more as I reach for it. I take it you like them, I say.
I'm still deciding. More testing is required.
He crunches half of the s'more in one bite.
I will admit, I was disappointed by the lack of marshmallow roasting at Bible camp, and the overabundance of prayer, which is all well and good, but could be done just as easily by actually getting out into the forest and admiring the Creator's creations. The staff did not agree. There's poison ivy out there, you know, and mosquitoes. Better lock yourself in the cabin and pray really, really hard for the whole horrible experience to end.
Sounds like those counselors would have gotten along well with these ones.
No shit, huh? In the middle of all this wilderness and we barely step outdoors. Why not just hold the conference between a McD's and a Starbucks? Which is what I told my mom after that first Bible camp. I'd rather be in the city than stuck in a cabin staring out at forest I'm not allowed to explore like I can at home.
You said you lived in the countryside?
Yes, ma'am. Tiny town about an hour outside Austin.
Is it just you and your mom? He nods and puts my s'more stacks into the toaster oven.
She was 40 when she met my dad. By that time, she figured she wasn't having kids. She was okay with that. Mom always went her own way. Grew up in the kind of town where there isn't a local vet because folks can barely afford medical care for their kids. Everyone wanted her to become a doctor, but her passion was animals. She didn't want to leave her family, though, so she commutes to a clinic in suburban Austin. It wasn't exactly the kind of life that encouraged dating. She liked it, though, and if it meant no husband and kids, that was fine.
Then she met your father. Elijah opens the oven before it dings.
Met my dad, had me, lost him, and kept on going. She dates. Mostly city guys that she doesn't bring around. Not stepdaddy material. Just, he waggles his brows. Dates. Totally understandable. We've baked 3 s'mores, and we both reach for them at the same time. I grab one and try to snatch up a second, but my fingers graze the hot pan and I yelp, dropping both. He scoops them up and shakes them at me. I grab for one, but he backs up, and I slide off the counter, just as he's coming back to give me the s'more, sandwiching me between him and the cupboards. Elijah grins down at me. Then he puts a s'more halfway into his mouth and arches one brow. I lift up the inch I need to be on eye level with him. Then I take one dainty bite from the edge of the s'more. His brow rises higher. I keep nibbling until our lips brush, and then I kiss him, tentatively at first, in case this isn't what he intended. His hands slide down to the hollow above my hips, and he chomps down his half of the s'more before kissing me back. After the first kiss, I expect this one to be a disappointment. That one had layered the thrill of danger with the buzz of the unexpected, making out with a cute stranger in an empty hall, hoping whoever was approaching didn't realize we'd broken into someplace we shouldn't be. Add in the realization that Elijah was a werewolf, and it's obvious the kiss held an extra something I shouldn't expect to find again. Yet, I do. He kisses me back, and sparklers explode in my brain, firing and popping and writing his name in the night sky. At first, I taste chocolate and marshmallow and graham cracker. Then that fades, and he tastes of things I never associated with tastes at all. He tastes of the forest, of sunshine and shadow, forest and meadow, fast-running water and lazy ponds, of the run and the chase and the hunt and the gloriousness of those moments when the human world slips away, when I am a creature whose skin I fully inhabit. In Elijah's kiss, I feel my wolf blood strumming through my veins, rising to meet his. Elijah's kiss is deep, hungry even, as if he's reaching for something, reaching into me and embracing what he finds there. I smell him, the musk of wolf mingled with his own scent. I feel him, the heat of his body blazing against mine. Yet that hunger stays in the kiss, held fiercely in check. His hands remain on my waist, fingers splayed, and as hot as firebrands where my t-shirt rides up, his skin meeting mine. He grips me firmly, but not as if he's forcing his hands to stay where they are. Not as if he needs to keep them from wandering up or down. Just like during our first kiss, the firmness feels as if it's for my sake, telling me his hands aren't going anywhere, that I won't feel them creeping and need to tense. Pulled from the kiss, ready for the no that becomes a war of wills and boundaries, my body a battlefield. His hands stay exactly where they are, letting me relax and enjoy the kiss until we run out of breath and separate, laughing softly as we pant for air. "Wow," I say. "You really are good at that." He hesitates and then lets out a whoosh of a laugh. "I was going to say the same thing about you. Pretty sure it's not me." I think it is. But, like with the s'more, I believe more testing might be in order. I'm teasing, but he doesn't need another hint. He pulls me against him for another amazing kiss that only breaks when my stomach growls, and he chuckles against my lips before backing up. "Making out is very strenuous," I say. "Burns so many calories." "S'more s'mores?" he says. "I think this requires protein." I have jerky. So you've said, and you may keep it.
I return to the pantry and come out with a jar of peanut butter. I take two Hershey bars and give one to Elijah. Then I open mine, break off a piece, and dip it into the peanut butter. We sit there, dipping and eating.
You said you have a dog?
He says. I nod. A shepherd border collie cross. Atalanta. Not named after the city.
Because that would be Atlanta. Atalanta is a huntress from Greek myth. I'm sure you hear that mistake a lot. Try having a dog named Lagahu. People come up with all kinds of weird mispronunciations for that.
Lagahu? I grin. You named your dog Werewolf? That's Caribbean, right? A variation on the French loup-garou? His grin matches my own.
Very good. It is indeed. Dad grew up in Jamaica, but his family was from Trinidad. That's where the Lagahu comes from. Someone dropped her in our front yard when she was a puppy, and Mom decided I was old enough to have a dog of my own.
Atalanta was abandoned, too. I found her in our old playhouse one winter, and I convinced Dad to let me give her to Logan as a Christmas present. Only, as it turned out, Logan had found her first and put her in the playhouse as a Christmas present for me. I didn't realize that until years later, because I was so excited about getting him a puppy that he didn't have the heart to tell me he'd rescued her for me.
That's kinda awesome.
I take another scoop of peanut butter on chocolate. My brother is awesome. I know you didn't see him at his best, but... A door bangs, right outside the kitchen, and we both freeze. Chapter 19. Kate. When a door bangs in the hall, we go still at first. Then footsteps sound, coming our way. Elijah wheels for the pantry, but I catch his arm and mouth, "No hiding spot." He hesitates only a moment before realizing I'm right. Once we're in that pantry, there's no place to go. If someone else is coming for food, they'll head straight for the pantry. The question is, what other option do we have? Only one. I run and duck behind the kitchen island. Elijah frowns, and I know what he's thinking, that it's hardly a perfect spot. But he slips over and crouches beside me, and I whisper a plan. The footsteps approach. They stop at the door. It creaks open. We've left the lights off. We can see well enough with the moon filtering through the skylight overhead. Whoever it is doesn't hesitate at finding the lock undone. Footsteps enter. The person pauses. I wait for the click of the lights, but the room stays semi-dark. The steps sound again, heading for the pantry. The setup of the room puts the pantry on the intruder's right. To get to it, though, they'll step past the island, meaning if they look left, they'll spot us. I track the intruder's steps as I creep toward the left side of the island. As soon as the footsteps pass the right edge, I zip around, and Elijah follows. We've left the pantry door open, but the person doesn't seem to notice that. When the footsteps move into the pantry, I lean out, just a little, and inhale deeply. I don't pick up a scent, which is odd. I creep out from my hiding spot. We're on a direct path to the door here. We just need to get to it while our fellow camper is inspecting the snack options. I dart soundlessly across the room. Elijah follows, bare feet padding as he carries his sneakers. I'm opening the kitchen door when I hear Elijah stop. I look back to see him frowning in the direction of the pantry. He mouths something I don't catch. I wave for him to get over here. He starts my way, and the footsteps head from the pantry. I look around wildly, but there's no place to go. I yank open the door and swing out. But that leaves Elijah in the kitchen, and I'm not going to abandon him. I reopen the door and step through, ready to take my punishment, as Elijah says,
"Kate?"
He's standing in the middle of the room, and he's alone. I look around. Then I circle the island, checking the pantry as I do.
"We didn't both hallucinate those footsteps," he says.
I shake my head.
"And we heard them stop about right here."
He stands on the right side of the island.
"No one could have gotten past you."
"No one did."
"I don't know much about magic," he says. "Any spell that can do this?"
"A blur spell distorts your form," I said. "That's sorcerer magic. A cover spell hides you. That's witch magic. You'd need to use both to slip past and then disappear." I clear my throat and say louder,
"If someone's in here, it's cool. We just came for a snack, same as you."
No answer. I turn on the light, and Elijah paces off the room while I watch from the corner, looking for a blur of movement. We don't see one. We check the pantry, too. It's not foolproof. We could have missed that telltale blur. When we finish, I call,
"You know the lock's on the outside, right? I can lock you in here."
Silence.
"Do you smell anyone?"
Elijah asks. I shake my head. Then I think of something, walk to the door, and drop to all fours. I sniff the ground. The only recent scents I pick up are mine and Elijah's. Hairs prickle on the back of my neck.
"No one but us, right?"
he says. I nod. "It's not a ghost, though. They couldn't open the door."
"So?"
he says. "I'll talk to Holly tonight and Logan tomorrow," I say. "Maybe I'm missing a spell or a subtype power. One of them will know. For now," I scoop up the rest of the chocolate bars and return the peanut butter to the pantry. "Time to clean up and clear out." I slip into my room 55 minutes after telling Holly I'd return in an hour. I'd have been sooner, but when I noticed I had 15 minutes left, Elijah found a way to fill 10 of them. I slip back into our room to find Holly reading. I toss her a Hershey bar. She looks from it to me and back again.
"Is this what you ate?" she asks.
"Because I want whatever you had." "You can flick off the lights. Your face is glowing enough for me to read by."
"You can have what I did, but I'd rather not offer up Elijah. Give me a room number, and I'll fetch you a proper midnight snack."
"I don't think it'll have the same effect." She flips onto her side, head braced on her arm. "You really like him, don't you?" "He's really likable. A nice guy in a very nice package. Also an amazing kisser." I thump onto my bed and sigh at the memory.
"So that line you gave him about not looking for a boyfriend? Changed your mind yet?"
"It wasn't a line. I'm on a dating hiatus." I tug off my shoes. "I'm still in recovery from the last one. First long-term boyfriend, first long-term burn."
"Jerk."
I smile at her.
"Thanks. I want to be one of those girls who bounces back and says it's his loss, but I'm not bouncing. Not mooning over him either. I got hurt worse than I expected."
"What happened?" She sits up.
"Sorry, you don't have to tell me, obviously."
"But I want to." The thought surprises me. The only person I've told is Nick, because he's the one I've always gone to for stuff like this. He dated a lot before he got married. I couldn't talk to Logan. He and Brandon moved in the same school circle, and that was awkward. If Logan had asked point blank, though, but he didn't. And I won't deny that stung. I'd have liked to tell Mom, but then Dad would find out. And while he wouldn't exactly hunt Brandon down for what he did, he'd want to. And I just wasn't ready to upset them both with a problem they couldn't fix for me. "It was sex," I say as I lay back on the bed. He wanted it and I didn't. Not yet. I look over at her. He wouldn't stop pushing. Even kissing felt like a constant battle to keep his hands from sliding up my shirt. Asshole. Right? I eventually did let him go farther, because I wanted to. But he just plowed through that like it was a hurdle on the way to his real goal. He didn't care about all the steps in between. I did. You wanted to slow down and enjoy the journey, and he was powering through to the finish line. Exactly. He was convinced I'd eventually give in. It wasn't as if I have hang-ups about sex. Maybe the fact I was open about it led him to believe he could talk me into it. She gives me a hard look. That sounds like taking responsibility for his inability to hear the word no. I don't mean that. It felt like there must be a solution to this situation, and I wasn't seeing it. And that was my fault. I tried to talk to him, and he'd just say, sure, yeah, he understood that I wasn't ready. And that was fine. But then the next day, he'd go right back to pushing for more. Eventually, he came up with a solution of his own. He found a girl who said yes. Seriously? What a jerk. In theory, no. If he felt he needed sex, then it was his prerogative to end our relationship and find someone else. The problem was that he skipped the ending it part. She turns so fast her bed squeaks. He cheated on you? Didn't even try to hide it. He went to a party and screwed around with a girl from school and then told me about it, letting me know someone else gave him what he wanted. Like that would make me see the error of my ways. What the? She bites off the curse and throws her hand out, a tiny fireball igniting. Take this. You know where to put it. I laugh. Thanks. If I had one of those at the time. I trail off and sit, pulling my knees in. No, that's a lie. I'd like to say I told him off, or even threw him across the room. I didn't. I went into shock. I barely got home before I broke down. I wouldn't have made it out of the room, Holly says softly, extinguishing the fireball. I can pretend I'd use that fireball on him, but I would have been crying too hard to see the spell. I'm sorry. He's a total asshole, and I'm really sorry. I nod, knees clutched tight. I'm looking at them, but she leans out and catches my expression. There's more? I hesitate. Then the words come. The ones that wouldn't even with Nick, that were too humiliating to tell him. People knew, I say. People at the party. The girl he picked. Of all the girls he could have chosen. Uh-huh, she says. And I know I don't need to explain. He told her that I wouldn't have sex with him, I say. So she offered to, thinking that would be her way to win him. Except he didn't want a relationship with her. When he tried getting back together with me, she told everyone that they'd had sex and why. She's the head of this clique I've had trouble with since I started high school. And this was exactly the sort of thing they'd been looking for. They started taunting me, sending stuff to my social media, even writing on the bathroom walls. At first, they said I was a frigid bitch, a prick tease. Then they decided I must be a lesbian. Then, maybe, since I'm not exactly full-figured, I must actually be a guy. And I was afraid Brandon would find out.
And then
tears run down my cheeks, and I swipe them away, horrified.
And then,
Holly says, so gently my tears only flow faster.
You don't need to tell me, but if it would help.
My brother. I spit out the words fast before I can change my mind. They started saying I wouldn't sleep with Brandon because I had a crush on...
My gorge rises, and I can't say the words. I don't need to.
Holly's sharp intake of breath tells me she gets it.
Those bitches. Those fucking bitches. I've never said that word before, but they deserve it.
Bitches? I say, laughing softly through my tears. She doesn't return the laugh.
Why would they say...
Oh, wait. Let me guess. The other accusations didn't bother you enough. Calling you gay. Calling you trans. I shake my head.
I don't consider those insults either. They didn't hurt me.
So they had to find something that would. She goes quiet, briefly before asking,
what did Logan say?
My laugh comes harsher now. I sure as hell wasn't telling him.
But what about the rest of it?
What about the rest? What about the fact that Logan still talks to Brandon, still hangs out with him and their mutual friends, still hangs out with the girl and her clique?
We're fine, I lie.
But that's the reason I'm not looking for a new boyfriend.
I'll take the fake one, though.
Now, speaking of Elijah and totally changing the subject, something weird happened in the kitchen, and I'm hoping you might be able to solve this particular mystery.
Chapter 20. Logan. Alan's room is down the hall from mine, so we walk back together. Behind us, my sister talks with Elijah and Holly, their voices faint. I lower mine when I say, have you spoken to Kate? I know she felt really bad about before. He stiffens a little and tries for a smile, but it comes out strained as he says, that's cool. I know. He clears his throat. What happened back then, it just happened. If I'd known where it would lead, I would have talked to her first. I certainly wasn't trying to trick her. About what you expected in a relationship? He looks over, and his gaze searches mine. That was the problem, right? I say. You wanted more than she was ready to give, relationship-wise. Is that what she said? Sure. I frown. Did you think it was something else? It wasn't. She really did like you, just not as a long-distance boyfriend. He laughs softly, relaxing. That's what she said. I just wasn't sure if she'd heard anything else that changed her mind. I definitely did come on way too strong back then. Your sister is just... He shrugs. When a girl like that shows interest, you go for it. Gotta take your shot while you can. I overdid it, and I'm sorry she felt bad. We walk a few more steps, then I say, about that guy she's with. Elijah? The corners of Alan's mouth twitch. You don't like him much, huh? It must be weird, him being a non-pack werewolf. He seems cool, though. They make a cute couple. They aren't a couple. I shake my head. Kate hasn't been herself lately, especially with guys. She ended it with her boyfriend, and now he's blowing up my phone because she won't talk to him. Better get used to it. Your sister is kinda unforgettable. Guys aren't going to get over her in a heartbeat. I sure didn't. Footsteps sound. But it's only Holly, and she doesn't see us as she heads the other way to her room. Kate and Elijah's steps go up the stairs.
Are they dodging curfew? I push back a dart of annoyance and turn to Alan. If you're still interested in her, just hold on. This thing with Elijah is only Kate goofing around. It'll pass. He shakes his head. I'm looking forward to getting to know Kate again, but only as a friend. She's like a flame. Once you see it, you can't stop looking at it, can't stop wanting to get closer. But then you get burned. Nah, not that. She just isn't right for guys like me. I'd constantly be waiting for her to find someone more exciting, more high energy, more like her. Around Kate, I feel like a plotter, as if she's revving on all cylinders and I'm struggling to keep up, wishing she'd slow down. He glances over. You know what I mean. I do. He isn't the only one who feels dull and plotting in Kate's company. She doesn't try to overshadow me, but she does, simply by existing. I cannot help but fade beside the flaming whirlwind that is my sister. Is that what bothered me, seeing her with Elijah? He has that same spark, that same energy. But this isn't a competition. Even when she was dating Brandon, she always had time for me. It was after she stopped dating him that the problem started. Anyway, Alan says, you don't need to worry about me being on the losing side of a love triangle. I'm glad to see her again. Glad to see both of you. This camp seems a whole lot more interesting tonight than it did this morning. From what I've seen, though, Elijah is far more her speed, and I have no intention of getting in his way. I walk into my room and flip on the light. A grunt sounds from the other side, and Mason lifts his head from the pillow. It takes him a moment to find his scowl. When he does, he rumbles, "Turn off the damn light. Some of us are sleeping." It's 10:30. "Well, dying takes a lot out of a guy. Now turn it off and go chase sticks until you're tired." I flip off the main light after I find and flick on a pen light from my bag. Mason groans. "Aren't you guys supposed to have night vision?" "Yes, but I need some small illumination to activate the rods in my eyes." The door closes tightly and blocks what little light might come from the hall. I strip my shirt off. He grunts and flips over, facing the wall. I shake my head at that, and then pull off my shorts and climb into bed. "I'm decent now," I say as I slide under the sheet. "And you don't need to worry anyway. I keep my boxers on."
"You better. You also better keep on your side of the room. If I wake up to find you anywhere near me, we're going to have a problem."
"You really have a very misinformed view of werewolves, don't you?" Another mutter. As I see his expression, my eyes narrow. "You aren't worried I'll devour you in your sleep, are you? You're warning me to stay on my side and keep my boxers on." I shine my pen light at him. "Is this about me performing rescue breathing on you?" He turns over, eyes shaded from my light.
"I'm just saying."
"It was rescue breathing, to save your life. I wasn't playing Prince Charming, waking you with a kiss. Even suggesting that I was thinking about anything other than reviving you is immature, ridiculous, and insulting."
"I didn't say you were gay."
"And that's not why it's insulting. I don't care if you think I'm gay. I care if you think I'd take advantage of someone in that condition." His head lifts, his expression in shadow.
"So you are gay."
"Are we really going there?"
"It's a simple, I have no idea what I am," I snap.
"And it doesn't matter. I was saving your life. And I haven't even gotten a thank you."
"You have no idea what you are?"
He pushes up onto one elbow.
"What kind of bullshit is that? Do you date guys, girls, or both? Do you hook up with guys, girls, or both?"
"I don't have time to date, and I don't have any interest in hooking up."
"But theoretically," he says,
Theoretically, I have no idea because I haven't met anyone who interests me.
So, you're ace?
I don't think so, but again, and I'll keep saying this, I don't know. I'm certainly not going to hash out my sexuality with you. If you're homophobic,
I'm not. Could have fooled me, I mutter.
I will be interested in whoever I'm interested in. And I can guarantee with 100% certainty that I am not interested in you. You are safe from my appetites of all varieties. 3 seconds of silence tick past.
So you do have appetites.
I groan and flick out my penlight. Good night, Mason. I wake to the click of the door opening. I wasn't sleeping. Not really. It's been a roller coaster day, and every time I start to drift off, I remember something I might have done wrong, something I might have said wrong, and I jolt awake, gut twisted by anxiety imps. So, when the door opens, I'm conscious enough to know it isn't Mason rising to use the bathroom. I can hear his steady breathing in the silence. The door creaks, new hinges sticking. Light slips through the opening, and I open my eyes, confirming that Mason is in his bed, sound asleep. Just as I think that, his breathing hitches, and his eyelids flutter, predator's instinct kicking in. His gaze meets mine, and his mouth twists, as if he's going to snarl something about me watching him while he sleeps. Then he stops, and his eyes slide toward the door. Footsteps pad inside, bare feet, moving as carefully as the intruders can manage, but to me, those steps are as loud as boot thuds. A whisper, cut short as the speaker is shushed. Mason's eyes slit as he watches. I focus on my other senses. Hearing tells me there are 3 people in my room. Scent suggests they're all male. None are anyone I've met in more than passing. Fellow campers, presumably here to play a midnight prank, put our hands in water hoping we'll piss the beds. Stick a harmless snake in our beds and stand back to watch the fun. Juvenile stunts, and I'd have hoped we'd pass that at our age, but apparently not. Mason stays still, watching and waiting. I almost pity the pranksters. They're just hoping for a fun gag to laugh at over breakfast, and Mason is going to make them wish they'd never opened that door. I'll be stuck playing mediator, making sure the situation doesn't get out of hand. I sigh under my breath. Maybe I should have just left Mason for dead. Of course, then he'd have risen as a vampire, and these guys would be in danger of more than black eyes and bruised egos. They start to close the door, only to discover it would plunge them into darkness. They leave it open a few inches. One whispers, "The blonde." And all 3 creep to my bed. I try not to sigh again. At least if I'm the target, Mason won't interfere, and we can just get this over with. I might be rolling my eyes, but I'm accustomed to the immaturity of teenage boys. I learned that when I found myself somehow assimilated into the popular clique at school. It wasn't where I wanted to be, but it saved me from dealing with the jocks. I've always had trouble with jocks. They used to mock me for being small. Now they harass me to join their teams. Dad had the same thing. If you start looking like an athlete, suddenly you're an asshole because you won't support your school by joining a team. One good thing about being at a private school is that the jocks and the popular guys are not necessarily the same people. So, while some people in my clique can be juvenile and self-absorbed, it's a safe place for me, which means I know guys like these, and now I just have to suffer through their prank. They step up beside the bed. My eyes are open the barest crack.
"Anyone bring a silver bullet?"
one says. I tense so fast I'm surprised they don't notice. According to the lore,
You only need a silver bullet for one reason: to kill a werewolf. Chapter 21. Logan.
A regular blade will work, right?
One asks.
It doesn't actually need to be silver.
So I hear. Anything that can hurt us can hurt them.
The second voice comes from the other end of my bed. I feel a tug, as if he's lifting the sheet from that end. Cool night air slides over my foot and calf. I force myself to stay perfectly still, even as my heart pounds.
You know what you're doing, right?
The first one says.
My dad's a doctor. I've had to work for him since I was 12. Padding my pre-med application. One nick to the Achilles tendon should do it.
Did he say cutting my Achilles tendon? This is a nightmare. It must be. I have actually drifted off, and everything from today is whipping through my mind, spinning crazy scenarios where the other campers find out what I am and decide to maim me while I sleep. The blade nears my skin. It doesn't touch, but I feel the chill of it. Every cell screams for me to leap up. What the hell am I doing? Even if it is a nightmare, do something. What if it's real? All the more reason to get off your ass, Lo, and kick theirs. No, because if this is not a nightmare, then I need to be sure they're going through with it. I need to feel that blade. Let it cut my skin. Proof of what they attempted.
Are you crazy?
No. I know how guys like this act. If I leap up, they'll say it was a joke. They'll make me feel paranoid, the new kid who's overreacting and trying to cause trouble. I know this because I've seen it. Some of my so-called friends have done it to other classmates, and I didn't participate. But nor did I say anything. And that makes me just as guilty. Doesn't it? Kate would have said something. She always says something. And you know what, Lo? That's an awesome moment of self-revelation, but now is not the time for epiphanies. Get off your ass! The blade presses against my skin. My attackers have gone silent, but I swear I smell them salivating. There's something unnatural here, something dark, a tension and a predatory anticipation. I remember what Elijah said.
Then there's the actual aggression, the shouting matches and fist fights, people snapping over anything. It's as if everyone's looking for an excuse to fuck or fight, you know? I can feel the tension. My hackles go up and stay up for no reason I can tell.
My hackles are up. They're up as high as they go. The blade presses and there's an oomph. The blade skating across my skin.
What the fuck? Mason roars. A knife?
I scramble up. He's got the guy in a headlock and has given him a bloody lip. It's Hayden, the blonde prep school guy Kate told off earlier. I register that as his two buddies rush Mason, I leap in front of him, facing them. You don't want to do that, I say. Mason lets out a hiss of pain behind me, and I look over to see a gash in his side. Hayden still holding the knife, blood painting the blade. He goes to slash again, and I kick, hitting his right arm. The knife clatters to the floor. I scoop it up and hand it to Mason. First step, I say to Mason. Disarm your attacker. As I release the knife, it flies out of my hand before Mason can take it. I grab it again and turn to the other two. Telekinetic half-demon, I presume, I say. They both charge at me. One grabs me, his fingers cold as ice. Mason yanks him off me. I drop the knife and stomp on it as the telekinetic demon tries to pull it to him. I knock him flying with a right hook. The dull thump of my fist hitting flesh, seconded by the crack of a rib. Hayden casts a knockback spell. I dodge and grab both his arms, effectively killing his ability to cast. When Hayden spits curses at me, I say, Next time, learn witch magic. Otherwise, it's far too easy to shut you down. More curses.
Sadly for him, they aren't actual curses. The telekinetic demon stays on the floor, doubled over, gasping for breath. "You're winded," I say. "Give it a minute. If you still have trouble breathing, that rib may have pierced a lung."
What the fuck?
The half-demon says, voice rising.
"You attacked a werewolf," Mason says behind me. "Did you expect him to wrap your knuckles and call you a naughty boy? Stop whining, and be thankful you can still breathe."
Under my foot, the knife wiggles, but the guy can't summon the power to wrest the knife out. Mason has his target, the ice demon, against the wall, wrists pinned. One of Mason's forearms presses against the half-demon's windpipe.
"How about you? Can you still breathe?"
The guy gasps.
"Good enough."
Blood streams from Mason's side, but it doesn't seem to bother him. He holds his target easily. While vampires don't get extra strength, Mason's big, and he's muscular, and he had the sense to avoid those ice-wielding fingers.
"This doesn't concern you," Hayden says to Mason.
Mason sneers.
"Seriously? That's the best you can do? Next, you'll be calling me a meddling kid, vowing revenge on me and my dog."
He jerks his chin at me. Hayden sniggers.
"Is that why you're defending him? He's your pet dog? Do you hump him? Or does he hump you? One of the counselors saw your intake form. He said that's why you went off on Mackenzie when she hit on you. You don't like girls, do you? Fuck you."
Mason makes a face.
"No. On second thought, I'd really rather not. But if guys like me make you nervous, you might want to watch your buddy here."
He jerks a thumb at one of the half-demons.
"He was definitely checking me out."
Hayden throws off a few homophobic slurs, followed up with threats.
"Yeah, yeah," Mason says. "You gonna come after me with a knife next? Might want to rethink that. I can't change into a wolf, but..."
Mason throws the ice demon aside. Then he runs a finger through the blood dripping from Hayden's busted lip. He licks it off and then bares his teeth. He doesn't have fangs, but the meaning is clear, and Hayden's eyes go wide.
"What the fuck? Vampires and werewolves?" "Yeah, it's such bullshit, being forced to associate with the sub-races."
Mason looks at me.
"Right, Logan? All these half-demons and sorcerers and necromancers call themselves supernaturals, but they piss their pants when we come around, like rabbits freaking out over wolves crashing their party. Guess what?"
He grins again, that flash of teeth.
"The predators are in the building."
He gives Hayden a hard shove.
"Now go run back to your rabbit hole."
This is...
"Unacceptable. And you're going to tell your daddy, some middle-aged nobody with a fancy job title? Skip the tattling, little boy. Send daddy straight to me. I'll show him how important he is. Doesn't matter who you are. Blood tastes like blood."
I should mediate here. Sand the edges off Mason's threats. Tell the guys we won't bother them if they don't bother us. But blood pounds in my ears, the thrill of an easy takedown fading under the outrage at what they tried to do. And I'm afraid if I open my mouth, what comes out will be the opposite of mediation. So I settle for shoving the ice demon toward his friend with,
"Help your buddy up, and then go."
The ice demon turns and glares at me, and then helps his telekinetic friend stand as Hayden stalks out.
"Can you believe those fucking guys?"
Mason slaps the door shut behind them and flicks on the light. Then he wheels on me.
"And you? What the hell were you doing?"
"Let's see. First, I retrieved this." I picked up the knife and handed it to him. "Potentially saving your life again because you forgot the first rule of fighting an armed opponent. Then, I disabled the other guys.
I believe I did my share. I mean before that. They were going to cut your goddamn tendon. Do you know what that means? I'd be unable to walk and I would require prompt surgery to repair it or risk a lifelong serious disability. Even after surgery, I might have difficulties. Also, there's the risk of cutting more than they intended, after which I could bleed out. He shakes his head. So you know exactly what it means. And yet you were lying there, listening to them plotting to maim you, letting them put the damn knife to your leg. I was waiting for the first cut. I wanted proof of what they intended. Otherwise, they could have claimed they were joking. Mason shakes his head and thumps onto his bed. I look at the closed door. We've made enough noise to bring someone running, but no one has. People heard the fight. They must have, and they're ignoring it. I need to warn my sister, I say. I'm heading for the door when I see the blood on Mason's bare torso. First, though, let me look at that. Mason waves me off. It's fine. I thought he got me good, but I barely feel it. Still, it's a long gash. It'll probably need stitches. I manage a wry smile. At least, that's the one thing you won't have to worry about when you go full vamp. You'll get insta-healing. Have you ever seen that? He shakes his head as he grabs a discarded t-shirt from the floor. Wait. I stop him as he's about to wipe off the cut. Blood doesn't come out easily. Trust me. I know. That's okay. It's not my shirt. I say nothing. He mops the blood and then stops, looking down at the red smeared shirt. Fuck. Yep, that is your shirt. Mine wouldn't be on the floor. I point to where my clothing is neatly folded on the dresser. I expect another curse. He's just staring down, not at the shirt, but at his wounded side. The shadow from his arm hides the injury. Is it worse than you thought? I ask. We should notify the counselors anyway. At the very least, it'll need cleaning. My sister has a first aid kit. She's the future doctor, but the counselors should... I trail off as he pulls back his hand. Underneath the faint wash of wiped blood, I can see his skin where it had been sliced open. The gash is gone.
Chapter 22. Kate. I'm asleep when Logan taps on the door. I don't wonder for a second who it is. I know that tap. For the first years of our lives, Logan and I shared a room. Right up until that became awkward. Awkward for everyone else. This was the only time in my life I wished I were a boy. And only because, if I had been, no one would have insisted on separate bedrooms until we wanted them. But there comes a time, too soon in my opinion, when opposite-gender siblings are not supposed to share a room. Mom made it seem like a celebratory rite of passage. We were old enough to have our own bedrooms. Wasn't that special? No, it was not. I had shared a crib with my brother. I don't remember it, of course, but I've seen photos and I've heard the stories. How they'd bought two cribs, but I'd scream until Mom and Dad put Logan in mine. Even if they tried keeping me up and putting him down alone, he'd fuss softly until I was beside him. When it came time for beds, one of us always crawled in with the other, until Mom and Dad gave up and shoved them together into a double. While Mom said we'd earned our separate rooms, we knew it was more about them than us. They wanted us in our own rooms because that was proper, so we didn't complain. But if we couldn't sleep, we'd creep to the other's door. While I'd slip into Logan's room, he'd always tap on my door, and when he did, it sounded just like this. I slide from bed and crack open the door to see Logan with a burly, dark-haired guy. There's been an incident, Logan whispers. May we come in? I lift a finger. I'm wearing a t-shirt, which is decent enough with Logan, but I'll pull on sweatpants for the stranger. I also rouse Holly, whispering that Logan needs to talk to me and asking whether she'd like us to go outside. She says no and rises to put on her own clothing. I let Logan in. When the big guy starts to follow, I block him. "Are you Mason?" I ask. He nods and steps forward again, presuming that's the ticket to entry. I grab